This episode is brought to you in partnership with Spinoff Records. Located near Richmond, Virginia, Spinoff Records has a vast, isonic, clean, eclectic selection with new inventory coming in weekly. For the bargain shopper, Spinoff has a large $1 to $5 selection, and whether you make big or conservative purchases, Spinoff supports all of its customers with a loyalty program. If you're not in the area, no need to fret. Spinoff has an amazing website where you can purchase from their amazing inventory and have it shipped to you anywhere in the U.S. For more information, visit them online at spinoffrecords.com or follow their Instagram account at spinoffrecordsrva.
Hey, this is Bombs in Context. I'd like to thank you for tuning into this updated episode of the Soup to Nut Show with Mitch Levin. This raw, honest discussion was later followed by a release party for his self-titled album. Since that release, Mitchell has closed out many of his social media channels and taken to the road to travel. A surprise release, When the Tide Comes In, an album of previously unreleased music, was dropped several weeks ago on his Bandcamp page, but this was not posted to streaming services. We've corrected all the social media links and posted connections to his streaming profiles so you can follow what's available. Also, if you listen after the interview, we've included Mitchell's I Wouldn't Know track we discuss in the interview. And if you want to get updates on our new show posts, make sure you subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. I know it's hard sometimes. For those of you with really, really good memories, when I went through Richmond, I had Tyler and Mitchell perform live, and Mitchell was first. The track that he played, I will play again after we actually close the show. So, Mitchell, how's it going, man?
Good. Happy to be here.
Hey, it's Moxham. You can say forward. You can say backward. Mitchell, how the hell are you doing tonight?
I'm good, man. I'm good. How are you?
Hey, I'm good now that I'm here with you and my two cohorts.
How's it going, Phantom?
Awesome, dude. What's going on, everybody?
Thanks, everybody, for showing up. We wouldn't be able to do it without you all, too. So it's not just us sitting up here. It's also you all helping us out with the comedic relief most of the time down at the bottom.
Yeah.
So what we will do is kick off the show like I usually do, and we will listen to Swim from Mitchell, and then come back and kind of do what we do.
I'm looking forward to tonight, Mitchell, man. I remember the live performance, man, and I was digging it, man, so I'm really looking forward to tonight.
Cool, I appreciate that, man. Yeah, I've been looking forward to this for a while. This is a new thing for me, so I'm learning as we go.
All right, so what we'll do is cut over, and we'll come right back with Mitchell Evan, our new family member on Soup to Nuts.
Yeah, man.
Thank my, thank God that I got the vaccination. I'm done looking for the love that I need on a 3-inch screen. I mean what I said when I said that I say what I mean. Advertised fuzz is echoing into the airwaves. Like a drug that won't stop using the minute that it takes. I'm tired of sleeping alone. hell of an internal conflict.
Brand new family member tonight, we got Mitchell Evan. For those of you with really good memories, you've already heard Mitchell when he was live when I set up that gig in Richmond with him and Tyler. So this has been a long time coming, but this is what worked best with his schedule. So lots of cool stuff that he's done. Mitchell, thanks, man. Thanks for being back and coming and taking some time with us.
Oh, yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Let's begin at the beginning. Before we get into swim, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? I did read that you went from Richmond to Colorado and then came back. So
yeah.
tell me a little bit about your background and then kind of how that switch back and forth took place and all that stuff with you as a musician. You know, how long have you been doing it?
Sure. So I born and raised in the Richmond area. I first started playing music when I was like 8 years old. You know, I was kind of forced to take piano lessons. Like a lot of kids, it didn't really take at first. You know, I went through the motions and learned some things here and there, but I don't remember being passionate about it or anything at the time. I didn't really find my own interest in music until a few years later when I was, I think, 12, maybe 13. I got my first guitar and started, you know, listening to some punk rock bands and skateboarding and really just wanted to do that. So I kind of had some close friends at the time that I skated with and listened to music with. We were like, let's start a band. And so I bought a guitar and kind of did it that way. You know, start the band first, learn how to play the instrument second. And we just kind of like faked it until it sounded way decent to us and started playing shows and stuff. But amidst that, you know, I I did choir growing up, like chorus in school and stuff. And I also did musical theater, like doing plays and musicals. Since I was real young, like 10 years old, up until through middle school and high school. So there was kind of these different musical and creative things going on. You know, everything from like playing punk rock music to, you know, being in a production of like A Christmas Carol and Hansel and Gretel and shit like that, you know. Yeah, so pretty eclectic, you know. I was never too good at school, but the one thing that I was good at was the social aspect of things, and I kind of prided myself on being a chameleon in some ways, able to blend in and fit in with a lot of different groups, I guess, depending on what I needed out of them, right?
Right, exactly.
But so yeah, I did that, and I played in several different bands by the time I graduated high school. You know, at first I was in this kind of a pop punk band for a few years with a couple friends, and real young, like we were playing at my middle school when I was like 13 in seventh grade, I think. We would play in the auditorium before school. My gym teacher was like a fan of us and like wanted to give us an opportunity to play in front of people. So he was like, yeah, just show up before school starts and we'll set you up in the gym. And then like when people get off the bus and come inside, they'll hear the music and they'll come in. It was like this bizarre thing, you know, but it was a lot of fun. And I remember there was one other band in our school at the time. We were really into Green Day and they were really into Blink-182. And we were kind of rivals in that way, you know? But I thought they had like, they were a grade or two above us. And I thought that they were so cool, you know? I wanted to be able to do what they were doing. They were playing at like the neighborhood clubhouse. And I went there one time and there was just like 50, like 13 year olds, like jumping up and down to, you know, all the small things or whatever. And I was like, this is so cool. So I remember our drummer was really gung-ho about it, and he loved talking to people, and he was good at talking to people. So he was booking us gigs. Like by the time I was in eighth grade, we were playing shows. We used to play at this venue in Richmond called Alley Cat, which was like a historic kind of, in my mind, you know, it seemed that way, like a historic, like alternative punk rock venue. And I saw some of the, you know, most high energy shows I've ever seen at that venue. And I'm so glad that I caught the tail end of that and got to play there, because it's not around anymore. And to be honest, there isn't a venue in Richmond that exists like that place anymore. No. I don't know if there ever will again, you know. It was wild, man. I mean, people jumping off the balcony and doing like stage dives and stuff. There were these really cool bands in Richmond at the time, like the Half Jeffersons and Race the Sun. Just really, really cool pop punk band. So that's what I wanted to do at first. And that's the type of music I was into. You know, I went to a bunch of Warped Tours and stuff. And I remember our drummer in that band, he wrote our first song. Or he wrote the lyrics anyway. And he had like a little tune. And I put some chords to it and we kind of fleshed it out, made it a song. And after that, I think I was real critical. I was like, no, I can make this a lot better. So I tried to one up him and write a song, I think, and found that I really liked the process of putting a song together, you know, and I don't know what the fuck I was being inspired by to write songs at 14, but I was faking it. I was imitating the stuff that I liked and, you know, the fantasy girlfriend that I didn't have. And so I did that. And when I look back on it now, it just seemed like we were just having fun and I was just going through the motions at the time. But now that I look back on it, you know, it was pretty out of the norm, like how active and serious about it we were, or at least I was, really young. Like we recorded our first time when I was maybe 15. And we put out two EPs with that band. Like, I think we recorded like maybe 10 to 12 songs all together, and some of which are pretty all right, you know. I'll go back and listen to them like once every couple of years, get a good laugh out of it, but they don't exist anywhere on the internet. And if they do, I'm not going to tell you where, but, you know, like, I don't know anyone else who was, in at least in my school that was, you know, trying to make records at 15. But it was just so much fun. I learned so much. And then as we kind of, me and the bandmates in that group kind of went in separate ways socially. We were in different schools and had different friend groups. And I started smoking pot and like chasing girls and getting into other stuff. And so my music taste changed and my inspirations changed. And I found that I wanted to do different music stuff. So, you know, to be honest, I think like smoking pot and hanging out with different crowds influenced that a lot. I was turned on to a lot of different music and influenced by a lot of different stuff. And then I formed a trio with two friends in high school, and we were really influenced by like Animal Collective and Grizzly Bear and kind of weird psych indie rock stuff. And I did that for a few years, and I had a duo that was just me on guitar and a drummer, and we put out some stuff, and all the while I'm also writing songs on an acoustic guitar or the piano and playing them, but primarily just in my bedroom. I was having more fun, I think, playing music with my friends, and that's what I was performing, like, on stages in Richmond with and playing house parties, but I was probably sitting on, you know, 25 to 50 solo acoustic songs at any given time and just kind of keeping it a secret. There were songs that like I would play to my friends at parties or, you know, play to my girlfriend at the time, whoever that might be, and to my mom and stuff that I didn't really share beyond that. And at the same time, I kind of had that other type of music that influenced and informed that stuff, which was more like Elliot Smith and Glenn Hansard and Nick yeah. Drake, you know, kind of these iconic like folk artists that I fell in love with, but I didn't have like my friends weren't listening to that stuff. I don't know if they would have got it. So I kind of kept it on the down low, you know, and I just did that for me. So yeah, after I was doing that for years, and it, like once a year, a couple times a year, I would go into a friend's studio and I would just like play them in a cut one or two takes and leave with a bunch of WAV files, you know, and I've got like hard drives of that stuff archived away. But, you know, I think by the time I graduated high school, I'd probably written like over 100 songs easy, you know, most probably not any good. But the point was that I was writing a lot, and, you know, I found some good ones in there, or at least parts of them were good and would inform what I would do later. And it was just a really time for me to experiment, and I was really excited about learning about music and how to construct a song and how to use words to convey the way that I felt. And my listening was kind of boundless. Like I was inspired by and listening to so many different types of music. By the time I graduated high school, I was doing very poorly in school, which is kind of the way that I rolled through school. I was interested in a lot of things, but getting good grades wasn't one of them. And I was very I lived in the moment, you know, and I had a lot of fun that way. But it when it came time to like apply to colleges, I was like, oh shit, what do I do now? And I saw that like everyone was, you know, going to schools all across the country, and I was just kind of like, I hope I graduate, you know. I ended up graduating high school very low in my class. Not proud of that, but it's where I was at the time. I was just way more interested in music and chasing girls and doing drugs than I was anything else. And then I got accepted to two schools, the one in Boulder, Colorado, and one in Shippensburg, Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah, Shippensburg, okay.
Yeah.
I know Shippensburg.
Which yeah. one of you from Philly?
I'm from Philly.
My
know Shippensburg well, man.
Yeah, yeah. So my dad
been,
went
been there,
there
for a few parties.
I think that's all that goes on at that school.
That is all that goes on there. So
I don't know if people actually get degrees from that.
You do. One in beer pong, I think. Viking, I think you have a degree in, you know, Bachelor of Arts in Viking. Right. It's just, it's, you know, it's all the beer games that you get the degrees in. Absolutely.
Right, right. Exactly. So I got into that school just barely. I really wanted to go to the one in Colorado, but that didn't end up happening. So I went to school in Pennsylvania. I didn't really want to go to school. I didn't really want to be in school, but I didn't really have the courage to speak up about that or to act on that at the time. I just kind of went with the motions because that's what everyone around me was doing, and which I think a lot of people, you know, can probably relate to.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so I went to school. I was going to do an interdisciplinary arts major, which is basically like an all-encompassing, like, brief overview of the fine arts. So I would take classes like theater and literature and visual art and music and stuff like that. So anyways, I only made it through 2 years before, you know, pretty much failing out of school. And I wrote a lot of songs during that period in time, but I didn't play out a whole lot because there wasn't shit for venues in Shippensburg. And so I would pretty much just play shows when I came home back to Richmond for like winter or summer break. And I would play with my band from high school. We would play a few shows here and there when I was back for break. But eventually, fast forward 2 years, dropped out of school. Things kind of, I was just reckless and didn't have a whole lot of direction. Wasn't happy or fulfilled. And kind of went down very rapidly with drug use and stuff like that, and wound up going to rehab at 19 after dropping out of school, which I have you know, no problem talking about that kind of stuff. It's part of my story, and I try to be transparent about it in my music and outside of my music, you know. So went to rehab at 19, and after that I moved to Colorado. Basically, I had a fresh start, new lease on life, and I just didn't really want to stay in Richmond at the time. I didn't think that it was the best thing for me to do, and didn't see a whole lot of opportunity for me here then. So I went to Colorado, and I lived just outside of Boulder. Finally made it there, even though I didn't end up going to school there. I had been out there before to visit a friend who went to UC Boulder, and had a lot of fun and liked the energy and stuff. So I went out there and worked some odd jobs. I did landscaping for a bit and washed dishes and worked in a restaurant. Worked as a barista, and all the while I'm writing a bunch of songs, playing a lot, you know, in my bedroom alone and trying to meet people. And I'm going to open mics every week. I don't really know anyone in Colorado at all. So at this point, I met a few people that played music, and I was going to open mics regularly and just kind of immersed myself in the scene as much as I could. I tried to form a band with a few guys and played together for a few months. Kind of fell off because I wasn't super interested in it. But I had been writing a lot, and I'd been sitting on songs that I'd written for a while. And I realized that, like, I was just tired of forming bands and them breaking up or investing years into a project and people going separate ways and realizing they didn't really want to play music for a career, you know, or that it was a hobby or something for them, which is fine, but not what I was interested in doing. So I decided that, you know, maybe it was time for me to start a solo project, something that I could rely on that would be kind of like an insurance policy, so to speak. And so for the first time in my life, I'm 20 years old now, and I'm playing under my name, and I decided to go by my first and middle name and leave out my last name. So I decided on Mitchell Evan, and I met a guy that I was working with at the coffee shop, a drummer, and then another guitarist came into the picture later, and we formed a band that I called Mitchell Evan and the Mangrove.
Which is a great name, by the way.
Hey, thanks, man. I don't really know how we came up with that. I was just thinking about a bunch of different stuff. I liked the idea of a grove. I later found out that Colorado in the Rocky Mountains, there's aspen trees, right? And yeah, aspen are actually a grove as well. So the cool thing about a grove is it's like, it's one organism, kind of like mushrooms form a mycelium mold under the ground and then they pop up in different places. It's really one organism that's connected underneath, and a grove is the same way. So it's not just like separate trees, you know, it's one thing that's connected at the root system. And I liked the concept of that like music could be kind of a web of interconnectivity, and this band, I wanted to go
with starting a solo project that could feature different people at different times. And I could be kind of the centerpiece of that. You know, I could build different, like if one person came and one person went, that would be okay. The band could be a rotating cast. So like that different things would pop up at different times. And so we went with that, and we started playing open mics. We started practicing at my friend's house. And after a while, not super long, maybe 6 months into us playing together, I met this guy named Lance, who's a producer out in Colorado, who worked with some big names back in the day, like The Fray, because they were based out of Denver, Sarah McLachlan, and some other people. And I was young and kind of enchanted by the idea of like working with a producer, you know?
Right.
So I got on board with it, and in retrospect, I would have done some things differently, but I try not to put too much energy into regret, you know? So like I don't regret anything, and I think that it all happened for a reason. We worked together for a few years, and we put out some cool stuff, and I learned a lot, which is most important. So the first record that I did with him was a 4-song EP. I had a few songs, and I was starting to play with these guys at the time, but we weren't really all that great as a band. Like, we were still figuring stuff out. The drummers were coming and going. The guitarist hadn't come in yet. So, like, it was really just me and the bassist, Dave, who were kind of playing together on regular basis. So when I met this producer, we decided to go, like, the studio band route and book a session and bring in some session players. I'm just rambling. Is that okay?
No, you're giving us the time.
Hey, man, keep going, man.
That is awesome.
Well, you asked for the background, so you know.
Absolutely, you're doing a great job.
All right, cool.
What I've gotten so far is you had fun in high school, went to shit, and had even more fun, went to rehab, right, and then moved to a state that where marijuana is legal.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. I just want to make sure I got it all straight. Now.
Yeah. Now, I'm
just giving you a hard time, brother.
No. I get that a lot. They're like, "Wait, you moved to Colorado to get sober?" You know, but. You know, the air's pretty clean up there, man. Despite all the pot smoke, it's pretty nice. And I love weed. It's just not good for me anymore, you know? Yeah, man, Colorado's great. But, okay, so we go to make this EP. We go down to Muscle Shoals, Alabama, and we record at the famous Fame Studios, you know, that they made, like, those old Aretha Franklin records at. And,
absolutely.
Yeah, man, you guys know it. And
that's awesome.
We did that thing and like brought in the studio band, and we had Will McFarlane played slide guitar, and Spooner Oldham was there for a session, and he's like actually the one playing organ and B3 on like some of those old Aretha records. And we had David Hood played bass, who was also like part of the original Swamper family. They called themselves the Swamper, that, you know, made the Skinner records and stuff. Also the father of Patterson Hood, who is kind of the lead guy in Drive-By Truckers.
Man.
Yeah, so it was cool, man. You know, I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. And I was, like, totally out of my comfort zone, but just, like, so excited, you know?
Absolutely. With that pedigree, why wouldn't you be?
Right. And so I just went in with these 4 songs, and there were these 4 guys there. The drummer was a younger guy. He was great. You know, the first thing I noticed, there was no computer. And there was like a 10-foot-long soundboard, you know?
Yeah.
So they're using, wow, like, I don't really know. I guess it was some sort of Neve or something. They're recording to tape, old school style, like one big tracking room, and I'm in an ISO booth. And I just played the song. They had heard some of the songs from, like, little voice memo demos we made and sent them. We fucked with the arrangement a little bit. They were like, yeah, let us play here. Let's open this section up and make it an instrumental right here so that we can jam on it a little bit. So we just made some little changes and said we'll extend the outro or whatever, you know. And we pretty much just, like, ran the songs, each song, like, 3 or 4 times. And then it was like, all right, we got it. Let's move on. So it was just one day, just one tracking day, maybe 6 or 8 hours in there. We were only down there for a weekend, flew into Nashville, drove down, drove back up to Nashville, flew back to Denver. And that's how the first EP was made. It's called A Place of Love, and it's under the name... Into the Mangrove on Spotify and iTunes and all that stuff.
All right, I'm gonna have to look that one up. I love the art, because I saw the, I guess you had one of, I don't know, it was the cover of the EP or just some art, but the mangrove with you at the helm, or, you know, of the ship. That was, I love that art piece. That was pretty impressive.
Well, thanks, man. Yeah, that's an artist out of Denver. His name's Travis Gillen. He did the second EP and our full-length album. At that point, by the time we did the second EP, I had a band in Colorado that was like a concrete band. And the cool thing about that band was it was a vocal-heavy band. I was obviously writing the songs and singing lead, but my bassist, Dave, was an incredible bassist and had a really nice high tenor voice. And the other guitarist, Connor, could sing well too. So we had these three-part harmony stacks, and we heavily incorporated that into the full-length record. And that's the one that you're talking about on the ship, kind of wrestling the waves in the album cover.
Awesome.
Yeah, that album was called Back and Forth. And
yes.
All three of those releases were produced by Lance Bendixson, the producer from Colorado. And Back and Forth was the last project we worked on together. And I released that 9 months later or something. I moved out. And the band and I there just kind of came to some creative differences and some personal differences. And it got really strained at the end, unfortunately. I think we just wanted different things musically, personally, and weren't really vibing like on a friend level. There was a lot of like stress and tension and resentment, and I think it was just wrestling egos, you know?
Right.
Competing egos, bunch of young guys trying to figure it out, and so we broke up. I was in a relationship at the time. Me and that girl broke up. And suddenly, like, my whole life out there in Colorado just stopped making sense. Like, I didn't know what I wanted to do or, you know, how I wanted to move forward musically. But in that last year before I left, after Back and Forth, basically, like, before Back and Forth was out and before the band and I had really officially broken up and played our last show, I had just moved on. Fuck the mangrove thing. I'm just going to go back to writing songs. I'm going to start over and really focus on like a true solo project, right? Like something that maybe I'll incorporate other people, but they're not going to be involved in the writing process. And there's going to be no confusion about like attachment to the band, you know?
Right.
So at that time I started working with my friend Ben in his home studio in a basement, which was like a totally different experience from working with Lance in these big studios. It's like I took a big step backwards. You know, I went from like hi-fi to lo-fi, which was really freeing in a way because it gave me a lot more creative control for one, and I was forced to make my own decisions, and I was forced to think wisely about how I was spending my money, and I was working on a tighter budget, and I had to do things differently. So Ben and I basically made this whole record in his basement, and that ended up being called Nostalgia. So like we finished the record almost. We almost finished the record, and Ben passed away unexpectedly. He had a heart attack.
Oh shit.
Yeah, at the age of 32, and that kind of rattled everything, and I was emotionally distraught about that. I had this record that was hanging in the balance. We were like 90% done. But, you know, beyond that, like, I didn't really care about the album anymore once. I mean, when he passed away, it was like...
That was your thing together with him, so it was like...
Right. Right, you know, and there was no one else was involved, you know, so it was like, I was just really confused, and I was trying to process his death, and his brother was an active musician in the Denver area, and his brother helped me find the hard drives, go through the files. Ben worked part-time at another studio in Denver. So we took the tracks there and had his old boss kind of help reconstruct these files and get a mix done. And I'm really grateful to those guys for kind of picking up the pieces, because I never would have been able to salvage it on my own. So it's interesting the way it panned out, you know, like after he passed, I didn't touch it for like a couple months. And then I realized that I had to make some decisions on what I was going to do with this thing. But I didn't want to, I wanted to keep the integrity of his mixes as much as I could. And I didn't want to do any more recording. I wanted to move on, and I wanted what Ben and I did together, I wanted that to remain intact. Some of the vocal takes on that album are like scratch vocal takes. Like from the first time I recorded it with an acoustic guitar, we tracked everything around it, and then we were going to do vocals. And unfortunately, he passed away before we got to those sets. It was really kind of pieced back together, and I was very insecure about it for a while. But as with most recordings that I've done, they grow on me with time. I think I'm most critical about a project I've done right after it's finished. And I kind of like it the least. Like the first time I hear it, because I'm just kind of picking it apart and I'm so judgmental of it. And I'm like always thinking, you know, what if we did this here, or maybe I shouldn't have done that there. Was that the right decision? You know, and once I've kind of released it and it's out in the world and I have some distance between myself and it, I can like listen to it as an objective listener and just kind of enjoy it.
So was nostalgia, the title, just something that came along because of everything that happened behind it? Or had you all decided on the title for the album before it was actually, before all of this took place?
Question. Yeah, we had decided on the title. Originally, I was going to call it It's a Hell of a Drug, Nostalgia, from that song Las Cruces that you mentioned earlier.
Yep, which we'll play. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a line in kind of the tail end of that song in the outro. And it's something that the phrase that a friend from high school used to say all the time that I thought was fun. The album is kind of, it's a reflection on older things and different times in my life. And some of the songs are about a relationship that had come and gone and childhood memories and old friends and kind of the transient nature of life, or of my life at least. It just kind of this like pattern of going to places, building relationships, and then tearing everything up and starting over.
So what eventually got you from Colorado to decide to come back to Richmond?
So yeah, it was like kind of everything came to a head. Band broke up. It was all over the course of a few months. Band broke up. Me and my girlfriend broke up. Ben died. I pretty much finished the record, like the mixing session with those guys at the studio in Denver where we're piecing it together. I think I moved out of Colorado like 2 days later. I was just like, you know, I've had it. I can't take it anymore. Nothing makes sense here. I go do something different. Yeah, sometime during the process of recording this, I also made the Little Horse tapes, which is what I wouldn't know is from. Those were basically cassette recordings that I did with another friend, kind of spontaneously.
So did you do the little horse tapes? Like, was that in Colorado, you said, or was that in Richmond?
No, that was in Colorado too.
Okay.
Yeah, so I did the Little Horse tapes in the midst of nostalgia, pretty much like during the period that Ben passed away. I was working on that with another friend.
Okay.
That was finished like shortly after he passed away, before I moved back to Virginia. And so I basically had these two projects when I came back to Virginia and just packed everything up in a van with my two dogs. I booked a few gigs across the country, like through Kansas and Ohio and stuff, and like basically toured back home. And then I moved in with my parents for a few months till I could get on my feet and get a place. And then I, you know, kind of did the whole thing over again. I started going to open mics in Virginia. I met up with some old friends. I made a lot of new friends. I met Tyler Meacham in kind of a new context. I knew her from when we were much younger in high school and stuff, but I met her and some of the people she was playing with, and I released the Little Horse tapes first, very shortly after I moved back to Virginia. Then that, like 6 months later, I released Nostalgia.
Now, so you've got Nostalgia out, but we listened to Swim first, and that's from a Nostalgia, but it's classified as a Nostalgia side B. So what's the difference between the Nostalgia proper and the Nostalgia side B part?
Right. Okay. So basically it was going to be one record, but I I was just listening to the songs. I was messing with the sequence of them and trying to figure out the track order. And there was one song that needed like a remix and a remaster. And so that took some more time. So I decided to just break it up into two parts based on how the songs felt to me. And so I just released side A as like a 5-song. I think it's 5, maybe it's 6. 5-song EP. And then I released side B as a 5-song EP within like 3 months of each other.
Now, Bombs, are we going to be able to hear something on the other side of that flip or what, brother?
Yes. So we did side B, and then Las Cruces, like you said, we're going to listen to that one, and that one is from the nostalgia, the for lack of a better term, side A.
Sweet, right, man. S backwards. I love it on the Super.
Absolutely. No, I do start back for it first.
Hey, you can say forwards, you can say backwards.
And right. Still mocks them. Well, hey, it's fitting. Sorry, the last year of that is very, to be honest, it's very jumbled up in my memory. It's hard to get the timeline straight because there were so many things happening at once, both personally and musically. It gets kind of confusing in my head, you know?
Well, I'll tell you, that was probably, I mean, and it's great because there are usually a lot of questions that we, you know, we pull out of artists and ask, but there, I mean, you gave us a very good overview of you as an artist and then the traveling and how that tied to the influences, as well as the production of the albums where we'll hear the tracks from. Just to kind of round it out for everybody who's here, I don't know if I mentioned it with Tyler, but so Mitchell mentioned Tyler. You'll remember that Tyler and Mitchell presented together and did their whole, we did that whole gig live at Black Iris. And then we had Tyler on the show right after that. Mitchell's already got a tie to that family member. When he and I were talking, he was also tied into the House Misgig fire with Nick Crook.
Right.
So he knew Nick Crook, and then when he presented, Nick actually showed up online to hear Mitchell's live gig and was commenting during the show, so he knows Nick too, which I thought was crazy.
That's
so
awesome.
So you're now an official family member, but you've had your ties out to a lot of our family in different places. And that's where I was like, when you started saying like, oh, I met up with a bunch of artists, I was like, if you say that you tied up with like Silver and Gold or members of Blueprint or all those other folk from Colorado, I was going to have a meltdown.
Right.
So, but yeah, no, I mean, that was a great comprehensive overview. You may be like, oh, it's just rambling, but it's really good for us to get to know you that way. And it does, it kind of just, it streamlines everything. Even the questions that we had, because you talked about production and how everything, you know, kind of how everything succinctly fit together for you. So first of all, though, congratulations on sobriety and getting yourself straight and all that. That's pretty damn impressive.
Well, thanks.
Especially amidst everything else. I mean, just listening to you give the narrative of your musical life and travels, that was the one thing for me watching you perform live. You are a very good storyteller about your tracks. There's
thanks,
a lot
man.
Of times where you sit and you watch artists and they're kind of awkward, but yours was the first time that it was like, it wasn't even like it felt rehearsed. It was like you knew it. Like, I want to tell you about this because this is why this is important to me. And then you just sing the song, but you don't go, oh, and remember in this phrase I said this. Like, you just told the story and said, these are the people that I want to thank. And this is, you know, for I Wouldn't Know. You gave that entire story about how you lost CDs and that, like, you'd put all your money into the cutting of those CDs and you left it in the spot. And then you gave, you know, the guy the shout out and I Wouldn't Know.
Yeah.
You're very good about your storytelling, which I was pretty impressed with, you know, watching you live.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I think sometimes it comes out better than others, depending on how I'm feeling. But I do think that one of the benefits of seeing an artist live, or at least for me, one of the special things about seeing an artist live, is that hopefully you get more than you would from recorded music, right? And
absolutely.
If I'm just up there playing the songs, you know, you can do that at home. But I think if I'm there in person in front of you, it's an opportunity to kind of get a little bit more personal, a little bit more vulnerable, and provide some insight to where these songs came from and why they mean something to me, and maybe that will help them mean more to the person listening.
And to kind of put it into a frame of reference for me amidst it all, and Tyler kind of talked about it, but when we showed up at the site, the poor bartender ended up being the impromptu sound guy and trying right. to get all these wires together. Mitchell hadn't eaten, so you had food that you brought in, and you were supposed to do all of the discussion, get all of that set up so that you could. So there was just so much stuff going on. And then right. after we talked and got everybody signed up and you introduced yourselves to everyone, I threw that wrench in with like, hey, do you think you could play I Wouldn't Know? And you were super accommodating and you're like, absolutely, I'll throw that in there. So you're in the back throwing food down your gullet, writing down like a new set list and like mixing old and new. And then for you to just like completely come out and no stutter at all. I mean, I was like, holy shit, this is hands down super ass impressive to me. Yeah, I was just blown away about the entire thing.
Well, thanks, man. You know, I appreciate that you had listened to the music ahead of time for one. And especially like at the level I'm at, you know, it's not every day that someone like requests a song. So I'm more than happy to do that. You know, I'm actually thrilled that someone has listened to it and that they want to hear a specific song. And it's like, I write so much and I'm always moving on to the next project that like it's really a joy for me to kind of go back and play older stuff, you know.
I mean, still hands down my favorite just because of how raw it is. You mentioned the going back to old school on the tape recordings and you mentioned a little bit about that live, how the track I Wouldn't Know and the Little Horse tapes were produced. You've got that grainy quality, which brings in that intimacy to it. But your ability to actually turn phrase in your music is really, really well done.
Thank you.
And so like with I Wouldn't Know, you and I had that conversation after we did the live before you started getting set up about that I'm saving money by sleeping in my car. I went down to the beach and now I've got sand in my bed and my dreams are coming out all grainy.
Yeah.
But I mean, just your ability to take all of those images and put them together into your sound. I mean, it's an art form, which is why I was like, well, how long have you been doing this? And what have you, because it's, and I guess it's just life, you know, for you to right. have those punk beginnings and then bring it there, that there's that maturation that goes with your writing. But There's a lot of life in the words that you're singing. So it caused me pause listening to all of your tracks that it's not just, I'm going to listen to this and take it. There's a lot of stuff that you have to really core down and listen to, which I appreciate. I enjoy like digging down into songs and stuff.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much. You know, some songs are like about one comprehensive thing and are more focused like on a specific event or a specific person. And some songs are kind of an amalgamation of like a tapestry of feelings, you know, or a more like a snapshot of a place and time. I Wouldn't Know is one of those songs. You know, it's like there's a lot of different people, places, and things thrown out in that song. And it kind of comes together in just a transmission of where I was at and how I was feeling. It's a very wordy song. And it's like, after I wrote it, I was kind of like, is anyone going to know what the hell I'm talking about? Yeah, probably not. But because some of the verses are so oddly specific that really it would only be me that would understand exactly where it was coming from. But, you know, some of the stuff that I've been inspired by and influenced by over the years is it's so specific that it becomes like visceral and tangible. And it, because it's not literal or telling like a linear story, it can be interpreted in a lot of different ways, or it can have meaning to the listener in a way that's unique to them, you know?
Well, and like I had mentioned to you when we met up, I think it's the whole concept of I Wouldn't Know like you do. You take us through snapshots and then you get down to, but you know, but I don't know. And it's that, I think that to me is what drew me in. And it was like, holy shit, this, I mean, just how raw it was. And I mentioned that, that there was like a Dylan type of quality to it that I was drawn to. Just the singer-songwriter, bare bones, raw song. And it's just emotionally impactful. And you're right. It's like, I may not personally know what it was, but what you were saying and just going, look, there are all these things that happen. And I don't know. That I was like, holy shit. Yeah, I don't know either, man. This is just the way the world is, you know? And right. So yeah. I was like supremely attracted to that. And so, I mean, not to tease anybody too much, but we will play that afterwards. So I guess to kind of transition back to something we have heard right now. So we, on the side B of Nostalgia, we listen to Swim. Now the title itself is set up like an acronym. It does the SWIM mean stuff? What's the story? What's the process behind Swim?
Yeah. So man, I like this. I like getting into the nitty gritty of the songs, you know, Swim. Yeah, so the acronym is really said what I meant, which is a phrase that's repeated a few times in the song. At the end of the song, it goes through the refrain, I meant what I said when I said that I said what I meant, which took me a while to get straight. I meant what I said when I said what I meant, which actually is like a coherent thought, you know, if you write it down. So that's what the SWIM is. And that song is very similar to I Wouldn't Know in its process and its approach to lyric writing, which is cool that we're kind of talking these two together because it's a lot of different things. It kind of moves from subject to subject and both the external environment that I'm living in and the people, but also the internal environment of my feelings and kind of the political and social climate of our times. And then the chorus is just kind of summed up in like, I'm fucking drowning, you know, in all of these things. And I can't even remember the line now. The more that I grasp, the less that I gasp, something like that, that I just can never seem to get my head above water. I can't catch my breath, you know. But the one thing that I can rely on and that you can rest assured is that I meant what I said when I said that I said what I meant, you know.
Well, see, and that's what I'm talking about. I mean, and I'm hoping that everybody got that same vibe. Is, I mean, that shit is crazy to me, right? So you have all of these things that have happened to you. You succinctly write stories about each of those things as islands. Then you have that one key phrase that's an acronym that you turn into Swim, and then you actually use swimming imagery on top of everything to say each of these things can cause me to drown, which is not even, it's just shit like that blew me away, dude. Like, I'm just like, what is even going on with this stuff? Because the thing is, it was like, we kind of got teamed up by Tyler. Because I had Tyler and she's like, look, you know, I don't have a lot of stuff. I got this guy. I really think that you should listen to him too. And I was like, sure, you know, more the merrier. Give me your stuff. And I was just blown away by your ability to write. Because there's the music and stuff like that. And the musicality and stuff is one part. And there's a specific talent to that. I think it's special for you because it's married to your words, but the way that you turn phrases in the genre that you're writing in, I mean, you've done a lot with your life already, but the fact that you're hidden in Richmond, for lack of better terms, right. Tyler did kind of talk a lot about how Richmond is growing, like the music scene is growing. And to your point, as your startups, for those people who didn't know that Richmond is still a heyday for punk and hardcore. Like, if you look at the record shops and stuff, there are still some who completely just cater right to that crowd because that scene is still underground and still very vibrant in Richmond. So that right. punk scene has always been here in different formats, which is crazy. Right. But now to see a Tyler or you for you all to be coming out of Richmond is insane to me. Yeah, you guys blew me away. I was like, because I was doing research on artists in Richmond and recommendations from folks, and Richmond itself is such an austere city. So it was like, okay, who can I find that's reliable that I can talk to about music? Man, it was crazy. The fact that you're hidden out here, the more we listen, this is stuff that I can feel good about taking around and getting on the streamed list and all of that stuff, because the way that you write is I think something special.
Well, thank you so much. You know, I'll keep working at it, but I agree. I feel blessed to be from here. I feel, grateful to be part of this community, and I am continually impressed by the amount and level of talent here. And that, like, in a city that's not all that big, you know, like, I'm still finding out about great bands that I've never heard of before, you know, like my peers that are doing it right now, which is crazy. And yeah, Tyler is such an amazing talent. I'm so excited for her.
You had mentioned when we were all together that you and she did a track together. This is going to be on your release, or is this going to be on her release too?
Oh yeah, man. You have such a good memory.
Thanks.
Yeah, you really do.
That's only because you took his Geritol. Don't let him fool you.
He's got these notes written down.
Exactly.
But, so Tyler is singing on one of my songs. That it'll be on my upcoming album. The song is called Cancel Out the Noise, which actually is on the Little Horse tape.
Oh, okay.
So there's an acoustic version of that on that EP. But the version that she's singing on my upcoming album is very different. It's like a pop rock kind of feel. It's full band. It's high energy, electric guitars. And she just knocked it out of the park, man. I can't wait to share this with you.
Oh, no doubt, man. Yeah. She was super fun. We talked to, you and I were going back and forth. I think we talked about Disney and stuff with her when she was on. I mean, we had great conversations with her, too. I'm pretty psyched to see, for both of you. I'm super psyched to see what's getting released, because you all give, like, for her, she's giving me the tasters on track by track by track. I was lucky with you.
Cool.
You had three albums worth of stuff that I could immerse myself in. So now it's like, now you're touring around and, you know, you've got your album coming out. I'm like, okay, I'm waiting for the next stuff. So, no, it's incredible that you guys came together, because I'm excited to see what that collaboration sounds like with both of your sounds, because you do have a difference in your sound, but I could see where your lines connect and how that would sound pretty impressive. So I'm excited.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I just saw her a couple weeks ago, and she just released, I think, the second, maybe the third song from her EP. And
yep.
Called Denver.
Yep.
Have you heard that one yet?
Yep. I got it running on our station. I played it on my Friday indie show the Friday it was released.
Cool. Yeah. And, you know, it's a little more like acoustic oriented than the other songs that she's released. And I saw that she got some review from like an Americana magazine or some Americana media outlet. And she was like, I never knew that like we were making Americana music. Like, I guess it's being classified as that now. And we were talking about it, and she was kind of having this little like mini crisis about like, what kind of music am I making, you know? And like, where does it fall? And we had a good conversation about like, where does one genre begin and where does the other end? And does it really matter? And like, is it possible to play like in two fields at once? I think that Tyler and I, we do come from different like musical sensibilities in a way. And like, we're aiming for different musical things, but there is like a shared middle ground, and I think that we could very well share a similar fan base, which is cool. Like, so we were going over some artists, like I mentioned Jade Bird, actually, who I gave you as one of my influences, and I think that she is an artist, if you're not familiar with her, who is,
yep,
the music is really like kind of pop rock indie, but I've seen her on tours with like, not gone and seen the show, but I've seen it listed that she's toured with like Jason Isbell and these Americana country artists, and she shares a fan base with like those people and also other indie rockers and pop stars. I'm fascinated by that middle line, you know.
The crisis is real, I guess, with with a lot of the artists that we have on the show, because there is a blending of, I mean, you know, life and sounds and influences and all those things kind of converge on what are you in that space. There are things right. that you like, but I mean, just even you go from punk to the Americana sound, and it's like, well, you still have those punk influences. So there are going to be things that have that rock kickback that are that, and then you have some things that are just pure storytelling, earthy tones and discussions for the Americana side, which is cool.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, those influences never go away. They just kind of take on different forms. But I think that's cool. And nostalgia, making that album, was really a big learning lesson for me. It's not a perfect record by any means, and I think that I've made a lot of growth in my writing since I released that album, but I will say that I think that I was kind of fearless in a lot of the ways that I put it together, and the trying, experimenting with different instruments and different sounds. It kind of seems that the reoccurring theme with me is, like, whenever I set out to try to sound like something, I always land, like, pretty far from that, you know? And maybe that's not a bad
thing. Well, I'll tell you what, this is a good segue, really good overview of everything. So let's do Las Cruces from the Nostalgia album, and then come back and kind of core down into that. Sound good?
Sounds good. Thank you.
Oh, anytime. Thank you. This has been amazing.
All right.
Y'all. All right. So we will go into the second set, and we will be right back with Mitchell Evan.
You're on Soup to Nuts, man.
Thank you.
correct. And it has been quite impressive, a discussion so far. Just listened to Las Cruces. That was amazing. I love that track. Well, and I'm guilty pleasures. Like, these three are some of my favorites. So I was like, oh, I could easily throw I Wouldn't Know back in there. I was like, nah, I got these other ones that I want to play. man, I didn't realize we're doing a good job on time here. We're like deep in time. It's like 11 o'clock.
Holy shit.
You okay, Mitchell, with going on for a little bit?
Yeah, I'm good if you guys are.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it.
So Las Cruces. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, Las Cruces, I kind of wrote after the band and I broke up in Colorado, that being the Mangrove. Sorry, there's a crazy grandfather clock in this room.
I was just going to say, man, it's time to go to church.
Are you like, are you going to mass? What's going on?
I'm like, damn.
Does sound pretty good, though.
It does.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it does. I love it those does sound good. Chimes.
All right, so I wrote Las Cruces shortly after the band and I broke up, or kind of amidst that and the like interpersonal strains that were going on with those band members, and it's really kind of an angry song, you know. It's basically like, fuck you, I'm going on the road. And at the end of the song, you know, I'm really just naming all of the places that I could go or would like to go, and that I can travel to and use music as a vehicle to get there and to see the world. And so it's kind of, I don't know if I would say bitter, but like it's a little, there's some courage and there's some, maybe some like, there's a little bit of like, righteous indignation and just like, I can do this, you know. But it's that kind of like hopeful, courageous naivety of like, nothing's holding me back but me, you know. After I wrote that song and split up with that band, that really started a period of my life where I was touring a lot solo, and I just like, I had done little tours before with different bands growing up and in Colorado. But this was the first time that I had ever gone on a tour by myself, like in my car alone with just an acoustic guitar. And, you know, Denver's kind of in the middle of nowhere geographically. So like the closest city is 9 hours away, like the closest major city, you know, Salt Lake City or Oklahoma City or shit, Dallas is really far, you know. So I started touring out of Colorado, and they were long trips. Like sometimes I'd be gone for 2 or 3 weeks at a time, and the gigs were like really hit or miss. I mean, some of them were good, but a lot of them were bad. But I learned a lot of really great stuff, and I wrote a lot while I was out there. So this song is just kind of, I can do anything, I can go anywhere, and that's what I'm gonna do.
I like the towards the end with the, you're gonna miss me when I'm gone, maybe you won't, you know. You're like, what?
Yeah, I could be wrong, but you know.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll be all right. Will you?
That's right. That's awesome. So, I'll tell you what. Who did we mention before? Jade Bird. Even with Jade right. Bird, there's that tie to Americana. But what is the Americana sound, and how do you find your sound influenced by some of these artists?
Okay, so, You know, that question of, like, your influences, it really puts me on the spot, because it's like, this is a big moment. It's like, what names am I going to tie to my name? It seems like it's such a big question, but I was trying not to overthink it. There's been some staple artists that have really impacted me along the way that I've been listening to for a long time. But I wanted to list artists that were relevant to me right now. And yeah, Jade Bird, she's got, there's so much like conviction and like strength in her voice and the way that she sings. And I love the way that that album is produced, and the instrumentation is sparse, but it's powerful. It just, it's a jammer, man. I love playing those songs really loud. And, His Golden Messenger is a band that I found a few years ago when I was in Colorado. The first record that I fell in love with was Heart Like a Levee. And
nice.
That album has some songs on it that really like punched me right in the gut. There's a song on that record called Cracked Windshield. And I kind of like worked retroactively, found that album, then listened to the older stuff, and now I've listened to the two albums he's put out since then. It's MC Taylor is the songwriter in that group, and going through the chronology of his work has been like, he's just an amazing artist, and the progression has been profound, starting off with really lo-fi home recordings to the stuff he's doing now. I think his records have been produced by Brad Cook, which is a producer out of North Carolina that works with like Bon Iver and another guy down there named Phil Cook that I like a lot. So I'm always fascinated by the production of his records, and I love the way they sound. I love the way he uses his voice. Usually, no, I wouldn't even say this. Like I articulate very well. I think not very well, but I try to articulate all pretty decently in my music, and I just want the words to be heard. But like, I wouldn't say that that's something that I'm a stickler about, you know. And with His Gold Messenger, he is so expressive in the way that he sings and in his literal voice that like sometimes I have no idea what he's saying, but there's like this feeling about it that just seems so honest, and it's just really warm. I just really like the way that it feels, you know. And I got to see that band in Denver, and they were awesome. Where are we? Big Thief. For a while now, I've kind of written within the Americana genre and worked with that toolbox, but like I'm informed by so many different things. And I, like I said, whenever I set out to aim for a sound, I always land somewhere else. And I like music like that that doesn't know boundaries, you know, like that's like one of my values is like I'm the opposite of like let's preserve the idea of this tradition or this genre. Because I think inherently that is counterproductive to the creative pursuit. So Big Thief is a band that like I found a couple years ago. They put out this record that I can't remember the name of. And Adrian Lanker is the singer in that band. One of the main singers, the other guy's Buck Meek. And it's just they're such a cool band. They don't really sound like anyone else. I don't even know who I would compare them to, but it's kind of reminiscent of the 90s, but it's lo-fi and like maybe, I don't know, in the same ballpark of Pavement or something like that. But I love the way that she sings. I love the way that she ties words together in kind of like a tapestry kind of way, like we talked about earlier. It's stream of consciousness, and she's weaving together these different images to describe a feeling. You know, without saying this is how I feel, but more like painting a picture with words. And I just think the instrumentation is super cool. I'm just amazed by them. So there's that. Michael Kiwanuka, he is I think he's originally from the Congo, but grew up and lives in London. And it is just incredible. The production is so amazing. It blows my mind.
Man, you've been amazing. Like, you've covered every single base. I almost feel bad. I haven't had to do too much. Like, we've done such a good job covering everything. Yeah, so I'll tell you what. This has been your show then. And I like to let the artist have closing words. So I pass the floor to you.
Sure, man. It's been a joy talking to you guys, and I really appreciate you having me on the show. Yeah, keep doing what you're doing. You know, it's meaningful to artists like me to have another avenue to reach listeners that I wouldn't be able to otherwise, and it also just to be asked meaningful, engaging questions about the music I make and my creative pursuit. Yeah, I hope to do it again soon.
Absolutely, and I'll tell you what, it's been an absolute pleasure. You're an artist in every sense of the word, and I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation with you. I appreciate all the insight and honesty and sharing your music with us.
Thanks, man. And I will just say one last thing that, if for those of you listening, you can follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Mitchell Evan Music. That's Mitchell with one L, and or on my website at MitchellEvanMusic.com.
And if you need, like I said, if you decide, look, I'm going to be live, or even when you're cutting the vinyl, if you want to, you know, record that live too on this, just reach out to us, and I can whip you up a movie real fast or write out some directions on how you do what you do. And then you'll have that as a recording that people can come and listen to on your channel as well.
Cool. That would be great.
Yeah. All right, Mox Phantom.
Hey, man, it was one hell of a night, man. And, you know, a lot of storytelling, man. And, you know, thanks for letting us kind of dig into your life a little bit, man. I appreciate it.
Mitchell, man, thanks for hanging out with us and spending time with us and telling us all about yourself, man. You got some good music.
I'll tell you what, I'll definitely keep track of you and then come by one of the venues or several of the venues when you're playing again, because I'd love to see you live again.
That way today. Sitting here in UPS, Jim Colletti saved my ass. I went and left my CDs in Phoenix. Sometimes I don't know why I'm out here on the road at all, loading in coffee shops and rest stops. At least I'm saving money, cause I'm sleeping in my car. But I went to the beach and got sand in my bed. Now my dreams are coming out kind of grainy, like a poorly developed photograph. Who knew Jim Groom was a thing? Hey, babe, Meg Gray ain't as bad as it seems, so they say. But I wouldn't know. Oh, I wouldn't know. Oh, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know. Yesterday I woke up at a California rest stop. Went to sleep in Salt Lake City, Utah. Rico's doing fine, I suppose, doing whatever it is he does, but he don't seem too thrilled about the moments. The latter-day snowboard saints says it all, they'll never say, take pity on me, I know you got a couch. Tabernacle or High Sage, Sacramento 108. I knew I'd lose going into that game of skate. Cause I'm out of practice at almost everything. And my mind is in the tenderloin of the San Francisco Bay. And my heart is in Edinburgh, catching a flight to Spain. The reception's getting worse by the day. Windy this gig to be hard. Oh no, you go, I'll catch up later on, I suppose.